from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A tough new federal law in Russia banning homosexual propaganda passed the Duma in June, signed by Vladimir Putin. In practice, the law bans most gay public expression. Critics say it's already led to a spike in anti-gay violence in Russia. It comes as countries, including America, are moving away from homophobia and as Russia prepares to host the Winter Olympics in Sochi. There are politics at work here, nationalism, and maybe a hot culture clash. This hour on Point, Russia's tough new stance on gays and the games. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you pouring out your Russian vodka, calling for a boycott, just listening? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Washington is Julia Yaffe, a Russia expert born in Moscow, now senior editor for The New Republic, where she's been covering the Russian laws and world reaction. Julia Yaffe, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Woods Hole, Massachusetts, is Masha Gessen, a Russian journalist and gay rights activist, author of The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. She's currently in the process of moving from Moscow to New York in reaction to Russia's new gay propaganda law and proposed laws that would allow children to be taken from same-sex couples. Masha Gessen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Julia, first, describe what's going on here. What's the new law, and is there a bigger social, political, nationalistic trend that it's part of? What's happening, Julia?
So the law bans propaganda of homosexual same-sex relationships to minors. So anybody under 18, you can't if they're in the audience, you can't publicly say that homosexuality is normal, that homosexual relations are normal, that they are on par with heterosexual relations. And then there's also a law banning adoptions by gay couples abroad and adoptions to countries where gay marriage is legal.
So they, yes, they use the word propaganda, but it sounds like just talking about it to our ears.
Yeah, I think it means publicly, but I mean, you can't. It's such a vaguely written law that it's kind of hard to understand how it will be applied. We have activists in Moscow who are currently challenging the law by going out into the street with a law with a poster that says homosexuality is normal. He was instantly arrested with a few others, and he's trying to get the case to court so he can keep appealing it and get it repealed. But maybe through that process, we can get some clarification on what this law actually means and how it's going to be applied.
What's the broader social circumstance that it's part of here? I'm reading 88% of Russians approve of this law. I mean, here we've been, have been in the U.S. in a kind of liberalizing era on gay rights. What's the larger context in Russia, Julia?
Well, you have the Patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church coming out and saying that these laws are a direct response to the West and to the West's normalization and legalization of homosexuality, homosexual marriages. And it's part, you know, the anti-gay propaganda law was signed in the, on the same day as a law protecting the feelings of religious believers. And you have this kind of backdrop of rising nationalism, the arrest of Pussy Riot, a crackdown on urban liberal opposition. It's a kind of retrenchment, a kind of revanchist moment, I think, for Putin as he tries to figure out how to frame his third term, which is largely seen, especially in the cities, as illegitimate.
The Russian Orthodox Patriarch called last month same-sex marriage, I guess, as you say, and perhaps in response to movement in the West, called same-sex marriage a very dangerous sign of the apocalypse. Masha Gessen, you're in the United States right now. It seems in part to avoid whatever's going on here culturally and legally in Russia. How do you describe what's happening, Masha?
Right, well, I agree with Julia, although I think it's important to note that the law doesn't actually specify public speech, so it could conceivably be applied against people speaking in private. And there are two important aspects of the law. One is that the way that it's written is quite intentionally vague. I mean, basically, it makes it clear that it can be applied to anyone at any time, and it necessitates selective enforcement. You can't enforce a law like that in an even manner because it's so vague. The other thing that I think is even more important about the law is that if you look at the wording, it bans the spread of information that can that can damage the spiritual or physical development of minors, including forming in them the erroneous impression of social equality, of traditional and non-traditional sexual relations. Now, what that means, it's the first law on the books in Russia that actually enshrines second-class citizenship. It makes it a crime to claim social equality. So it essentially places any movement, any speech, including possibly private speech, certainly any speech on the web that discusses gay and lesbian rights outside the law, makes it punishable.
I'm also looking here at news reports that suggest, this is from the Financial Times, that there's been a spate of homophobic attacks on gays in Russia, partly in response to this. This scene as a kind of a government, what, stamp of approval on homophobia in Russia?
Yeah, at this point it seems pretty clear that there's a rise in anti-gay violence. Some of it is orchestrated by the authorities. Protests against these laws have turned into essentially orchestrated gay bashings. There was one demonstration in which I participated in June, the day that the law was passed in its final reading. And there was a crowd of about 300 people who were there to beat the protesters. The police were not there to protect us. And several journalists were actually able to document the fact that a large part of that crowd had been hired. So they were paid to gay bash.
We have a little sound, I think, from that very encounter. This was gay rights campaigners clashing with others outside the Russian parliament. This was in June over the gay propaganda bill, reported here by the BBC.
The gay rights activists are shouting, "Fascists, get out of Russia." The anti-gay campaigners over there are shouting, "Moscow is not Sodom."
"This is my country. Go and live in Europe," says the man with the shaven head. "This is our country too," reply the gay rights campaigners.
Julia Yaffe, there's the sound in June. Of course, this is law now, and all of this rumbling right into this coming winter's February Winter Olympic Games. We had big games in Moscow just last week, and, you know, there it was, right in the middle of things. You had the gold medal-winning Russian pole vaulter, who has been designated as sort of the mayor of the Olympic Village, coming up for the Sochi Winter Games, suggesting that others should stay out of Russian law. This is Russia's business. You had Swedish athletes at the games last week painting their fingernails rainbow colors in support of gay activists. Could that potentially be seen, once the TV cameras start running in the Olympics, something like that, Julia, as an offense to this Russian law? Colorful fingernails.
I mean, like Masha said, who knows? This is a again, like Masha said, a very, very vaguely written law. It has yet to be really enforced. And I think what you're seeing here is how the Russian state operates. They pass a law that's designed exclusively for domestic consumption, without kind of thinking about what will happen when they host a major global sporting event. And now it seems like they're kind of taken by surprise by this fierce global reaction. I don't think they anticipated it. And so they have to keep trotting out officials to say kind of mutually contradicting things like, oh, the law won't be in effect for the athletes, or no, it will be, but it doesn't punish homosexual relations and calm down. It's not a big deal. I just don't think they thought ahead. I don't think they thought it through. You also had, by the way, Nick Simmons coming out and attacking Isinbayeva, saying she was behind the times. You have people speculating again about that kiss we saw this morning of two runners who they look like, you know, they're overjoyed at winning, and a photograph captured them kissing on the lips, and now people are portraying that as a their protest of the anti-gay law. So you're already seeing it permeate this athletic event in Moscow, and it's not even close to the size of what we're going to see in February.
There have been calls to boycott. So far, I don't see a lot of traction on that. President Obama himself suggesting, let's not go that way. Let's send athletes, including gay athletes, and have them do well in Moscow. There's been Russian vodka poured into gutters and demonstrations here and there. What about the scale of pushback here, Julie? We're going to talk with a Sports Illustrated reporter later in this hour, but do you see serious consequences for the Winter Olympics in Russia or not at this point accumulating?
I mean, you're already seeing serious, serious repercussions for the Olympics. This is a very personal project for Putin. He flew to lobby the International Olympic Committee in person to get this the Olympics on Russian turf. He's a big sports fanatic. He's a very Soviet man in that regard. And now it's already being tarnished, and we're still several months out from the games. And it's sparking I think this is what, by passing the law, Russians are saying, and you had Isinbayeva saying something similar, like, you in the West have your morally base culture, and we have our own pure Christian Russian culture, and you should stay out of it. But by passing this law ahead of the Olympics, it's become an issue where the whole world is discussing what's going on inside of Russia.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Russia's tough stance on gays, what's driving it, and where it may take the Olympics this winter. Julia Yaffe, senior editor at The New Republic, is with us from Washington. Masha Gessen, Russian journalist and author of The Man Without a Face, joins us as well. Julia mentioned U.S. runner Nick Simmons won the silver medal in the World Track and Field Championships in Moscow last week, dedicated his medal to gay and lesbian friends, and denounced the gay propaganda law in Moscow. Here was Nick Simmons in the Russian capital.
You know, I think that Russia's an incredible country with great history. Are they perhaps a little bit behind the times when it comes to this issue? I think that they are. And I think that in 50 to 100 years, we're all going to look back and say, how could we have treated our gay and lesbian friends so poorly?
But so far, that's not the way Russian officials certainly are looking at it. In a news conference yesterday in Moscow, Russia's sports minister, Vitaly Mutko, defended the country's laws banning the promotion, discussion of homosexuality, as reported here by Euronews.
We want to protect our children whose minds have not yet been shaped by the propaganda of drug abuse, alcoholism, and non-traditional sexual relationships. We want them to make their own decisions when they grow up. That's what this law is directed at.
And here's prominent Russian pole vaulter Yelena Ispaneva responding to international criticism of Russia's gay propaganda laws in a news conference last week, Thursday.
It's unrespectful to our country, it's unrespectful to our citizen, because we are Russians, maybe we are different than European people, than other people from different lands. We have our law, which everyone have to respect.
Russia's gold medalist there, putting that flag right out there. Later, she blamed everything on her poor English, called it a misunderstanding, but it seems pretty clear that the tone of that. Masha Gessen, what about her argument? Look, we've got our own society, our own culture. Back off.
Well, that is very much the point of the law. And I think it's important to understand that it's not the result of some sort of popular push to get rid of gays and lesbians. But Putin himself, I think, sees it as a first line of defense against what he perceives as a Western attack on his regime. The way that he perceived the protest movement last year in Russia was that if anybody came out to protest his rule, then they were protesting Russia itself. And if they were protesting Russia itself, then they were the enemy. And if they were the enemy, then they were foreigners, they were agents of the West, they were probably funded by the State Department. And who personifies all of that better? Who is like the quintessential foreign agent? To him, that's gays and lesbians. That is sort of the essence of Western culture on Russian soil. And that's what's driving those laws. They're not going to stop at gays and lesbians, obviously, but gays and lesbians make a perfect sort of first target and a perfect symbol of this corrupting Western influence that a Russia in retrenchment needs to address. If you're asking me about the substance of Isinbayeva's argument, I think that that's a discussion the world had a long time ago. No, we do not think that a country can use its sovereignty and its own culture as an excuse for violating human rights.
I mean, I take your point entirely. On the other hand, and you say Russian people were not driving this. On the other hand, if these polls are right, you've got polls coming out of Russia saying 88% support this law, 85% oppose gay marriage. It was not that many years ago in the United States that, I mean, we had DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, on the books until like 2 seconds ago. And public opinion not strong in favor of gay rights not that many years ago. So is this country in a position to throw stones?
Yes, because, well, first of all, again, it, you know, hate sells. And you can't imagine the amount of anti-gay, hateful, dehumanizing rhetoric that's on television practically day in and day out at this point in Russia. I think if you did that in most countries, and in that sense, you're absolutely right to make the comparison between American and Russian culture. If you did that in most countries, you would get overwhelming support for hateful legislation. Unfortunately, that's how it works. We generally think that it's the job of any government to protect its minorities.
Well, that's been pretty prominent in Russia. Here's some tape. This was April last year. This is prominent Russian news anchor Dmitry Kiselev talking on his TV show Historic Process, saying anti-gay law should be taken even further in Russia.
Я считаю, что штрафовать геев за пропаганду.
Right in the face of the gay population, here the Russian news anchor saying, I believe it's not enough to impose fines on gays for engaging in propaganda of homosexuality among adolescents. We need to ban them from donating blood and sperm if they die in car accidents. We need to bury their hearts in the ground or burn them as they are unsuitable for the aiding of anyone's life. Julia Yaffe, that sounds so incendiary. What's that coming from?
So my favorite part of that clip is that you have everybody in the audience and on the panel with Kiselev just sitting there with stone faces, and then the audience kind of pallidly applauding the line. That was kind of horrifying to watch. I'm going to take issue with something Masha said, though I largely agree with her. The law, there's a couple things at play here. The law did start. Most of federal law in Russia does not come from the bottom. It doesn't ever come about as a popular push. It comes from the top. This law, unlike most laws, came from the Russian regions. It came from Astrakhan, from Arkhangelsk. Then it made its way to St. Petersburg, where a local deputy started pushing it. And then it made its way up to the federal level in Moscow. Now, you have things like this playing into homophobia in Russia that's kind of been existent throughout. If you look at the way the polls track over the last 10 years, people see homosexuality in Russia as an abnormality. But whereas 10 years ago, if you had the vast majority of people saying, answering the question that, you know, if a friend or a relative came out to you as gay or a colleague came out to you as gay, how would you react? Mm-hmm. Most people said without emotion, you know, I wouldn't care. We'd go on with life. Now those numbers have dipped and, you know, now people are saying I would seek professional help for them. I would disown them. I would try to convert them to a heterosexual lifestyle. So you have this law playing kind of into a traditional homophobia that you see in many societies. And then you have it kind of brought to a fever pitch by the state, by what you're seeing on TV, like Masha said. And it's, you know, it's kind of creating this perfect violent storm.
Masha, you describe this as in part an outcome of Russia in retrenchment and maybe looking to nationalism for pride or cohesion. In retrenchment, really? I mean, I think a lot of the world has seen Russia as sort of resurgent lately. Large natural gas revenues, President Putin standing, you know, loud and proud. Well, where's the retrenchment?
Well, Putin has faced an incredible drop in popularity, a large-scale protest movement, and he rightly perceives his constituency as shrinking. The only political strategy here has ever used is a strategy of fear and a strategy of mobilization. He basically needs to communicate to his constituency that Russia is on the verge of catastrophe and he's the only person who can save it. That's what he's always done for 13 years that he's been in power. Now, he needs to exaggerate that catastrophe even more at this point and draw the lines even more clearly between Russia and its perceived enemies. The perceived enemy at this point is the West. And what he is trying to tell his shrinking constituency is, you know, we're in extreme danger from this corrupting influence that's coming in from the West. That's where the patriarch's apocalyptic rhetoric comes in. That's where the anti-gay laws come in.
And it gives him cover to oppose liberalization of many kinds, I guess you're suggesting.
It's not just opposing liberalization. They kind of have to. He kind of has to paint any kind of potential liberalization. It's not like Russia was discussing same-sex marriage, for God's sake. So you have to paint the threat first, and then you have to mobilize the constituency to oppose it.
Masha Gessen, Julie Yaffe, please stand by. I want to begin to bring our listeners in. Victor's calling from Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Victor, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Good day. Yeah, this is par for the course for the world's most famous and powerful psychopath. It's a triple win for him. He gets to reinforce his constituency within the Russian Orthodox Church. He gets to reinforce his constituency, support with his constituency amongst those conservative elements of Russian society. Any attack against Russia now will be an attack against the motherland. And this is what you see in very conservative societies. Same thing in Saudi Arabia. That's got a ban on homosexuality, amongst other things. By the way, that is, in fact, known as the mecca of down-low gay sexual activity, and every pun is intended. I just wanted to ask, I think the sports minister should be asked, if you support only traditional marriages, then that implies that homosexuality is a choice. I would ask sports minister when he chose to be heterosexual. Thank you very much.
Victor, I appreciate your call. Julia, I mean, part of what's interesting here is that Russia in general, I'm not sure, is a very conservative society socially. I mean, this seems to be a particular strand of conservatism being emphasized here. But more broadly, is it really conservative?
So Masha Lipman, a political analyst, actually wrote a great piece about this on the New Yorker's website. Russia is actually not all that conservative. It has one of the highest divorce rates in the world, has a very high abortion rate, very high rate of single motherhood. And this stuff is kind of, you know, there's lip service to traditional marriage and traditional families, but especially given the demographic crisis that we've been seeing in Russia for the last two decades, this is not something that's practically viable. So people kind of turn a blind eye to it. Homosexuality is this weird outlier, and it has in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, has been seen by Russians as a choice, as almost a fashion choice. People will say, oh, well, it's, you know, kids will think it's cool and they'll want to be gay. Or people have seen it as a psychiatric or psychological aberration, which, let's be honest, is how people in America saw it, you know, 30, 40 years ago. I think Russia is behind the times. It's behind the times in a lot of things, and this is one of them. It's, you know, and also, to be fair, I could see, you know, the Texas legislature passing something like this, you know, to protect our children against nefarious gay propaganda. So when we talk about conservative societies, I think, yeah, I mean, conservative societies have a lot of contradictions that, you know, are kind of sewn into the fabric of them.
Masha Gessen, what's fair here in terms of the world's response to this move in Russia? I mean, I'm trying to picture if 20 years ago, Moscow had criticized the United States for not permitting gay marriage. It had criticized American, you know, cultural norms on the understanding of homosexuality at that time. I don't think it would have been a very friendly response in the United States. What's fair in terms of upbraiding Russia now?
Yeah, I don't think that's a fair comparison at all, because again, what I think is most significant about this law on anti-gay propaganda, this law on so-called homosexual propaganda, is that it enshrines second-class citizenship. It's essentially a fascist law. And that's what really sets it apart from other odious laws.
Many gay Americans said they suffered that until gay marriage began to become more widely available here quite recently.
There was never a point in this country when actually speaking about equal rights for a particular population was itself considered a crime. I mean, this True. Really goes beyond the experience of most Western countries. And in this sense, comparisons to Nazi Germany are perfectly appropriate. This is a law, again, that enshrines second-class citizenship. There is also the roadmap that Yelena Mizulina, the head of the Committee on the Family in the Duma, and at this point the main moving force behind these laws, has laid out, which is that they are planning to also pass laws that will create mechanisms for removing children from same-sex families. This is the kind of thing we're looking at. I think the world's response is absolutely essential. And yes, the United States is perfectly justified in taking a moral stand in relationship to Russia, or any other country is perfectly justified. And the response should be making their lives hell. As Julia rightly noted, they didn't expect this kind of international outcry. They really thought this was the one minority that they could get away with waging war against on Russian soil without the world sort of noticing.
We're going to hear in just a moment from Tim Layden, a Sports Illustrated reporter. I'm reading an essay here saying that under this new law, even a judge, lawyer, or lawmaker cannot publicly argue for tolerance without the threat, the possibility of punishment. Mel in Worcester, Ohio. Mel, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I agree with many of the points made, and I think Marsh's point that, you know, regardless of the position the United States has taken, regardless of the absurd laws that have been instituted here, I think we need to stand up. And, you know, it seems to be kind of a harken back to the pogrom days against the Jews, that the state and, you know, the church managed to target a particular vulnerable group. And I think that that's what gay folks in Russia are experiencing now, and we need to stand with them. Thanks.
Mel, I appreciate your call from Ohio. Julia, there have in fact been some pretty horrendous attacks on gay Russians in recent months.
Yes, that's right. One particularly horrifying attack took place in Volgograd in May, where a bunch of young guys in their 20s were sitting around on a park bench drinking beer, and it kind of came out that one of their friends was gay. They started to beat him. They stripped him naked. They started pushing beer bottles in his rear passage, as the Russian euphemism calls it. Then they tried to set him on fire and then crushed his head with a 45-pound boulder. And what was strange about that is then afterwards his, the victim's friends and family then came out and said, no, he was a normal guy. He didn't show any signs of homosexuality. So let's say he was not gay. Just the thought that that he was gay was enough for his friends to just turn on him and kill him is horrifying. You also have the rise of this neo-Nazi man named Maxim Marcinkevich, who is waging this really horrific campaign against gays by baiting homosexual men into sexual encounters with younger men, and then humiliating them on camera.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Russia's tough stance on gays, what's driving it, and where it may take the Olympics this winter in Sochi. Julia Yaffe is here from The New Republic. Masha Gessen, Russian journalist, is with us, author of The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. In just a couple of seconds, Tim Layden of Sports Illustrated joins us. Here's President Obama. He said he was offended by the Russian anti-gay laws, but thinks a boycott of the Winter Olympics would be inappropriate. This was a couple of weeks ago on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, the president saying gay athletes should not be treated any differently than others in the upcoming Olympics.
They're athletes. They're there to compete. And if Russia wants to uphold the Olympic spirit, then every judgment should be made on the track or in the swimming pool, sure, or on the balance beam, and people's sexual orientation shouldn't have anything to do with it.
Well, we will see how that goes. Here was a Russian talking in January as a gay rights protest was going on outside the Duma there, expressing his disgust at a sort of kissing protest in opposition to the gay propaganda law that was proposed. Here he is.
Moscow is not Sodom. We are here to support normal people, healthy people that want to create stable Orthodox families, raise their children in the spirit of Orthodox traditions, brotherhood, and popular unity.
Patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church calling gay marriage a sign of the apocalypse. With us right now from Simsbury, Connecticut, is Tim Layden, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. Of course, they are already and will be big time all over the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. Tim, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. My pleasure.
How is the International Olympic Committee responding to this uproar so far?
Well, the International Olympic Committee, from a formal standpoint, what they've done is ask Russia for clarification on the extent to which athletes will be allowed to speak and I guess, in a sense, protest, and will they be subject to arrest or other punishment during the Games. And the IOC has not yet received or has not made public the receipt of any clarification from Russia as yet. Obviously, the first international competition of great magnitude that we saw was last week at the World Track and Field Championships, which were in Moscow. And there were a number of as you say, flashpoint moments during that nine-day competition.
We had the Swedish athletes with their sort of gay rainbow fingernails. We had the American silver medalist there speaking out, dedicating his medal to his gay friends. But is there a real threat here that at the Olympics we could see people, I don't know, make gay rights statements or gestures from the podium and be let off by Russian police?
Well, it's very interesting. On the second to last day of the track and field championships, Russia won the 4x400-meter relay and the women's 4x400-meter relay, and two of the four members of that team kissed on the male podium. Now, it's unclear whether that was a protest or simply a celebration.
Yeah.
They had also kissed on the track. And, you know, what's unclear is even if that was not a protest, it still called attention to the circumstance, which either Russia wants or doesn't want. Now, athletes, it's important to understand that the Olympics are a highly visible international event. But for the athletes, they are not first and foremost a platform for social commentary, although they can be that. First and foremost, they're the culmination of years and hours of tireless preparation with, in many cases, one chance to win a gold medal. So athletes are probably right now, definitely right now, discussing with their publicity teams and with their coaches and families as to exactly how to handle this. Whether they're gay, lesbian, or straight, it's still a chance for them to say something, but is that in the best interest of their career as athletes?
I mean, we get that, but certainly when political statements are made at the Olympics, they can resonate for years and years. Everybody still remembers 1968, Mexico City, and the two American sprinters, Tommy Smith and John Carlos, with their raised fists protesting racial inequities at that time. I mean, nobody's forgotten that. That's just two guys, and it's lasted for decades in people's minds.
No, absolutely. And the thing to remember there is that Tommy Smith and John Carlos finished first and third in that race and conducted their protest after the race. Great courage, great longevity, and great impact in what they did. But in a sense, what we're talking about here is whether athletes will come forward and criticize and protest in the 6 months leading up to the Olympics. It's another thing altogether for an athlete who is a likely medalist.
Yeah.
To consider whether they would protest on the medal stand after winning a medal than it is to consider an athlete putting their personality and their situation on the line in advance of the Olympics, which can affect them in all sorts of negative ways, even if it can create great social force.
And what about boycott talk? Of course, it was after the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, the U.S. government led a boycott. 1980, the Soviets followed boycotting the L.A. Games in 84. Is there serious talk about a boycott, talk with weight to it at this point, Tim?
No, my sense is that there's no weight to it. President Obama has obviously come out and said that he would not support a boycott. And I think that it's very well established in history that the lesson of 1980 is that that did not affect the course of history, that did not cause Russia to pull out of Afghanistan,
yep.
which was the political modus operandi for staging the boycott. All it really did was prevent an entire generation of athletes from participating in the Olympics.
Marcia Gessen, you know this government well. Can you imagine Russian police sort of, you know, in the wings at the Olympic ceremonies, watching out for any sign of gay rights support and, I don't know, bringing on the handcuffs? Or are they going to be more careful in that most public of arenas?
Well, Russia is a country where the unimaginable happens a lot recently. Who couldn't imagine these kinds of laws being passed even a couple of years ago on the federal level? So, so I would hesitate to rule anything out. It is, however, hard to imagine. But Russian authorities have been placed in a really difficult conundrum at this point. On the one hand, they feel compelled to assure the International Olympic Committee that athletes will be safe. And this is actually an important point because there's an alternative to the boycott, which is moving the Olympic Games. And in fact, the charter of the International Olympic Committee, from what I understand, requires it to move the Games if protection cannot be assured for all participants. So that is why the committee is compelled to get assurances from Russia. And that is why Russia is in such a difficult situation, because on the one hand, they want to assure the International Olympic Committee. On the other hand, that is not going to sell well domestically. That will be caving into the West. I mean, that is that they're falling right into the trap that they have set for themselves by engaging in this anti-gay rhetoric as a variant of anti-Western rhetoric.
I want to be sure I understand what you mean. It won't play well, you're saying, for them to bow to Western calls to back off on the gay front during the games. Russian popular opinion will be upset by that?
Absolutely. I mean, again, this anti-gay campaign has been sold to the population as a campaign against the corrupting influence of the West. So then what happens? The West comes in and says, now please give us assurances that our gay and lesbian athletes will be safe. And what is Russia supposed to do after taking this brave stand against the apocalyptic spectra of same-sex marriage? Is it going to assure the West that its depraved gay and lesbian athletes are going to be safe in Russia? That would be seen as caving in.
Wow.
So they're put in a horrible position, and it's a great thing to watch, actually.
Tim,
can I add one thing?
Yes, Julia,
there?
Please.
Sorry for jumping
Not
in. I agree with Masha, and it also just goes to this centuries-long conundrum that Russia has been in since Peter the Great put it into that bind, is that on one hand, we as Russians want to be part of the West. Putin frequently talks about how Russia is an integral part of Europe, that Europe is nothing without Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. On the other hand, we're the un-West. We're, you know, the successor to Byzantium. We're the only true Christianity. We're kind of holding down the fort for the rest of Western civilization and Christianity. So there's this tension at play underneath all of this, you know, buried deep under all of this, is that on one hand, we want to be part of the West. We want to sit at the table with Europe and the U.S. We want to be treated seriously by them. We want to be treated as a peer by them. On the other hand, we want to not be like them and use them as a, when convenient, use them as a boogeyman at home. Mm-hmm. So you have this kind of, again, the decision in Russia about what to do with this and what assurances to give the IOC and the West will, like Masha said, play and you know, will be suffused with this tension.
Tim, if the IOC does not get what they consider sufficient assurances from the Russian authorities that they won't be arresting, let's say, gay athletes, I mean, can you imagine a scenario where after all the billions that have reportedly been spent in Sochi, they would move the Winter Games, move them where?
No, see, that's the issue, Tom. It is a clause in the Olympic Charter that under various circumstances, the Olympic Games could be moved, but it's completely impractical. The Olympics are an almost indescribable, incomprehensibly large operation that involves tens of thousands of volunteers, 7 years of planning to arrange transportation schedules, housing, food. It's completely implausible that the games could be moved, even to Vancouver, which hosted them 4 years ago. Volunteers have gone home to their residences all over Canada.
Yeah.
It's not practical to bring them back in. The 2014 Winter Olympics will take place in Russia, or they won't take place at all. And I think it will be the former.
You know, I'm reading here Harvey Firestein, the actor, playwright, American, writing in The Times, saying, in 1936, the world attended the Olympics in Germany. Few participants said a word about Hitler's campaign against the Jews. There's a price for tolerating intolerance. What about that parallel? What do you make of it, Tim? Harvey makes it there.
Well, again, I go back to, and again, I come from the sports world on this.
Yep.
And your point earlier, that the Olympics can be a uniquely powerful platform for social commentary and social change. At the same time, these are athletes, many of whom have only one chance in their life to compete for an Olympic gold medal, or even to compete in the Olympics period, because the vast majority of Olympic athletes will not win medals. They will simply take with them into the rest of their life.
Tim, would you have said that in 1936?
I beg your pardon?
Would you have said that in 1936?
Well, I assume I would have, because the central athletic core of the Olympic Games has not changed for the athletes who are competing. The political background of the Olympics may change that experience for the athletes, but for those athletes, it is still an athletic competition.
Let's go to Linda in Barnwell, South Carolina. Linda, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
I'm just calling to voice my opinion. I totally agree with the Russians. I don't agree with violence. But I think that the gay culture, any time that their lifestyle is not accepted, I think they resort to the ultimate in propaganda, which is comparing the views that oppose them with Hitler and that kind of thing. I do understand and I agree that the gay lifestyle is a detriment to the family, the traditional family. I, from what I've read about how the Russians are dealing with this, they don't want it in their faces. They don't want it in their society's faces. They're not saying don't be gay. If that is your preference, then keep it in the bedroom. I totally agree with that. This is not a civil right.
What about rights of expression, Linda, to be who you are in public?
If it offends people, I think you should keep it in the bedroom. You have the right to keep that in the bedroom. I agree with the Russians. I just think that they want it, you gays there, to keep it in the bedroom. We don't want it all in our faces.
Linda, we got it. An American ready to step up with the Russian law there. We hear it, Linda. I appreciate your call. Bob in Bloomington, Indiana. Bob, you're on.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'll take a different avenue with this. Do you think this law in Russia is going to cause us to take a closer look at our own laws? Because we also have a ban on gay men donating blood here in America. And to the aspect of the Olympics, how is this going to affect gay athletes when it comes to health services in the Olympics over there? I mean, do you just have to lie and say, I'm not gay, therefore you can provide me health services?
You mean if they have a medical emergency in Russia? I don't know if there's any connection exactly, but there are a lot of nuances to be played out here. Bob, I appreciate your call as well. And one more, Alex in Boston. Alex, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to have some comments, you know, about what I heard from your panel and from one of the callers. You know, while I'm definitely not in favor of the new law, but what I heard so far is just grossly, you know, exaggerated.
Are you Russian, Alex?
I am Russian, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I travel to Russia quite often, and I live in America, and I listen to the Russian politicians and, you know, a lot of Russian media in Russian. And what I have to say is that, you know, comparing current law to, like, Nuremberg law in Nazi Germany, or the other caller compared the situation with gays in Russia to the situation in Saudi Arabia, where people are getting hanged for that, you know, this is just completely out of proportion. You know, majority of the Russian people, their attitude towards gay people are generally normal, you know, completely normal. What are they against, the majority of the people, what they're against is the education, the gay education in schools or things like gay parades, you know, but that's the, on the other hand, if you take the same kind of a survey in this country, you know, I'm pretty sure, especially, you know, southern states or, you know, evangelicals, you would find they're pretty much the same attitude.
Alex, our time is short, but I appreciate your call as well. Masha Geshen, respond there. Alex says, you know, hey, it's not so bad. It's exaggerated.
It's not as bad as it got in Nazi Germany. It's not as bad as it is in Saudi Arabia. Should we wait for it to get as bad? The roadmap has been laid out. Again, you know, we're talking about calls to violence. We're talking about real sort of dehumanizing war rhetoric. And we're talking about the intention to pass new legislation that will remove children from same-sex families.
That would get anybody's attention. Julia Yaffe, do you see Russia in response to world criticism going more down this path or pulling back?
I think we'll see, but there is no way, absolutely no way, that in response to all this outcry that Putin will say, you know what, let's re-examine the law and repeal it. So either we see a status quo or we see him digging in even more.
Tim, we've just got 10 seconds here. You see this as a big issue in the Winter Olympics at this point. Is Sports Illustrated preparing a Olympic flag with multicolored rings?
I don't know if we're going that far, but we're prepared to cover all aspects of the Olympics. And Tom, I'm sure that when we get to Sochi, we will see protests because athletes are very individualistic people and we will cover those protests.
Tim Layden with Sports Illustrated, Masha Geshen and Julia Yaffe. Thanks to all of you for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.